delighted to have Olivia Mayall introducing the second half of the morning. Olivia is the Managing Director of the Global Multi-Asset Group at JP Morgan. Olivia, over to you.
Thank you very much, James. Good morning. I shan't take it personally if I notice that your eyes are drifting behind me, because I've just noticed that the Shard's looking pretty glamorous behind my head. I think that's a much better view than looking at me for the next 10 minutes or so. But I shall assume if your eyes are vaguely in this direction, it's because you're in rapture at the things that I'm telling you. But I'll believe it either way. We've had some very interesting discussion this morning, and the key things that have been focused on are the impact of legislation and education and looking at the individual and how they behave and how we can get them to engage a little bit more. And there is a third leg, if you like, to the stool of the challenge that we're facing here, which is what to do when it comes to investing and to think about the default and to think about ways to get members engaged with the investment side of the argument, as well as knowing they need to start putting their money away for the future. So we heard a little bit from Roger in the last panel about the impact of education on US investors and the fact that it started to have a very material impact on the DC platform there. And what I would like to do just in the next few moments is to just give you some insights that we've gleaned from US investors and how we've seen business develop there, really thinking about that idea of investor engagement, thinking about legislation, but most importantly then, how does that refer to investing? And I hope that will engage some debates from the panel afterwards. So we begin looking a little bit at the problem, and this summarizes, I think, a lot of what you've already heard this morning. So we know that when we look at DC, the assumption is that the reliance is on the individual, and that's certainly been the case in the US. But of course, individuals don't really take an interest, or not enough of an interest, in their savings, in their pensions, and it's about engagement, but having very relevant investment solutions to try and sort out this problem. So trying to plan or bridge the gap between the people's vision for their retirement, their expectations, and then the reality of investing and how that can match those expectations is somewhere that we all share the same problem. So we begin with the issue of legislation. I'm not sure if you can see those pictures on the left-hand side. On the left-hand picture, the chap on the right-hand side is Jamie Dimon, chairman of JP Morgan. I'm not sure who the guy on the left is, but you might know. But really what we're doing here is looking at engaging with legislators, engaging with the movement in planning for this industry and how we can start to influence that legislation. That's something we've done very actively in the US. And there's some of the things that have been happening in America you can see reflected here. I should say the lady in pink, looking very vociferous and passionate about her topic, is my equivalent in the States. So she's very passionate about this topic, hence why I was kind enough to include her picture so you could see her. But the key things here are thinking about tax incentives, thinking about tax penalties to stop Americans making withdrawals from their 401k schemes. Remember that, because that's going to come up in a minute. Things like automatic enrollment, you've heard a lot about that this morning, and things like safe harbor, trying to help people to take advice and to give the employer protection from some of the difficulties that might engage. But education is key, as well as legislation, and I think that's something very interesting, which really echoes Roger's comments earlier. This picture just shows, and really just looking at the broad shape of the bars, the fact that the one on the left is little and the one on the right is bigger. That's all the chart is trying to show you. This shows you the impact of getting investors, or getting individuals, just people, to just one session or more on thinking about their pension scheme. We very grandly call this in America audience of one. We have to think of little taglines all the time in America to get people engaged with things. That's audience of one just means you are the individual and you need to make decisions about your pension. But the drastic impact, and one of the comments was made about how one of the things is engaging young people, engaging young women, engaging people under 30. And you can see very clearly here the impact of just getting a little bit of education to Americans onto thinking about their pensions, thinking about investing. Our experience in the US is that went from about 30% of people on track to get that perceived income that they want to see in the future up to almost 90%. That's a phenomenal number. The impact of education for US investors has been very, very good. So this, for us, is the second leg, if you like, of the story, something you've heard a little bit about today. But this brings us to the third piece, which is investment, and thinking about how to tailor the investments to the individual and tailor the investments to the expectations of those individuals over time. And the answer to this in the States during the early 90s and the early 2000s was to look at target date funds. This really was to deal with people's lack of engagement, their lack of confidence in making investment decisions, and the fact that this was a one-size-fits-all, easy way to get people into the appropriate investment for them at the appropriate time. And obviously, you all know what these types of funds were trying to do, which was give you a very specific asset allocation dependent on your age and your forward-looking date of retirement, and to make that asset allocation change automatically over time. Now, obviously, the intention is that you would put lots of money in at the start with a very aggressive asset allocation, and therefore the path would get you to the right point at the end. So lots of equities to begin with, and then transitioning that over time. And trying to think a little bit more about risk, trying to understand that the volatility at the end of your pension's life is so much more important than at the beginning of your pension's life. None of these things are revelatory, but all of them are extremely important when thinking about default plans. So for US investors, this is where things went. But the question that came up in the middle of the 2000s was this enough? Was it tailored enough? Was it responsive enough to the actual, I guess, the needs, or more importantly, the behavior of the individuals that were investing? Did it really cope with real life rather than the theory of how people would behave? And that's really something where we've seen a lot of progress. And this, I thought, would be very interesting to share with you. On the left-hand side, we have really the assumptions that people made when they started to talk about target date funds in the US. So the first thing was that individuals get a raise every year. Don't know how you feel about that in the room, but that'd be nice. But getting a raise every year was totally in the forward-looking assumptions that people made. The second thing was that people would contribute about 6% at the beginning. When they got to 35, they would start to put 10% of their salary in. And we heard just a few moments ago about the issues of people trying to afford to buy houses, trying to do those sorts of things. The youth of today certainly would say that at 35, 10% of their assets are something that they want to keep spending rather than would be religiously putting into their pensions. And in the US, that was certainly no different. The orange box that then shows you that people didn't, the assumption was nobody would take their money out, that this was long-term savings, everybody understood the principles, put the money in today, you get the benefit tomorrow, so don't touch it. And then finally, that after retirement, you stay in the plan, so that the intention of the investment was to keep going after that retirement date. So your planning went through the target date and out the other side. So everything was built on this basis. And then we did some work. We took all of the data that existed in the US and looked at participant behavior. So instead of making it theoretical, we made it real. And we looked at what do people actually do. So the center column is looking at what everybody does. And then the right-hand column is looking at what do those people who just tick the default box do. And when you look at this, it gets a little bit scary. So what you see here, first of all, is that people don't get a raise every year. On average, they got one every other year. That still sounds okay these days, but sounds pretty good. So you get a raise every other year. That's quite a significant assumption that's different from where we started. Once a year versus once every other year. But much more interestingly, you see that the average contribution rate for the defaulted participant started at 5, not 6. Again, those of you that are mathematicians in the room know that 5 versus 6 compounded over 20, 30, 40 years is pretty material. And that would rise very, very slowly, getting up to about 8% at 50, not 10% at 35. And at 65, you were almost getting towards 10%. So that's when people started to panic. Started to think, now I'll just pile money into my pension, it'll be fine. Well, of course, those assumptions that we've based it on are the fact that you were doing that very, very early and getting all the benefits. And then finally, two things more that are interesting. Firstly, that people took money out. And you can do that in the US in your 401k. Suddenly, the children need to go to college, and you need some money. I haven't got any money left, I'll take it out of my pension. And if you do that, all those assumptions suddenly go out the window because you no longer have that pot of money growing in the pattern that you expected. So by the time they got to retirement age, they'd taken out 30% of the assets they'd put in their pension, which is the absolute inverse of what you're supposed to do. So not very helpful in terms of thinking about these assumptions. And then finally, only 1/5 of the participants stayed in the plan 3 years after it had come to an end. So that assumption that people stay in and therefore you're planning through that retirement age and coming out the other side really wasn't very relevant. So why am I telling you all of this? Well, it's about thinking not just in terms of theory, but in thinking in terms of real people, real lives, and how they live. And therefore, when you put the investment solution together, you can't just say, well, it worked in the past, those assets worked in the past, those people behaved like that in the past, I think this is what people will do. You have to look at the fact that these are individuals. They're people, they have real life issues, and therefore the investment has to reflect that. So this sort of data was instrumental in how people now think about investing in the US pension market. And so what's the conclusion of all of that? Well, it's that the sort of standard off-the-shelf target date answer isn't enough. You need a glide path. You need to think more carefully about where the points are on the road and how people will behave, and therefore where the asset allocation should be. And in thinking about that glide path, you need to think about the types of assets that you might put in there. Not just thinking equities work long term and then I want to trend into bonds. Try and be a little bit smarter about that. Look at other assets, look at things which are less directional to the market, less traditional. Think about real estate, think about the emerging markets. In the US, everybody focused solely on the domestic markets. Thinking more broadly, diversifying better, we all know that's a good thing. We all have more perspective on that on this side of the pond, but certainly it's been a transition that we've seen US investors go through. And it's really starting to think about the individual rather than the corporate. So not just thinking what's the easy answer, what just fits, what's everybody else doing, but starting to think what's the participant behavior that we see, how do people behave. We heard a little bit about recruitment consultants and how their plans might change. You've got to think about the individual plan and how maybe the glide path might vary. And thinking about encouraging investors to understand investing, keeping it nice and simple. This glide path isn't terribly complicated. It shows people that their asset allocation changes over time, but getting them engaged with the idea of the type of investments they're making, the diversification they're getting, and the mixture of their portfolio over time. So what does that bring you to then think about in terms of the cash flows of participants, so the things that will affect how the investment moves? Well, you have to include them in the design of the plan and the design of the portfolio that you put together. And you don't just want to think of that in terms of broad asset allocation. You need to think in terms of risk and in terms of how that plan will behave over time. And most importantly, have forward-looking simulations of not just behavior, but also investment performance, so that you're not thinking what worked in the past, either in terms of asset allocation or in terms of how people actually look at their money, will be how they do that in the future. And that's certainly something which we've seen US investors adapting to. So I hope that's a little food for thought. I'm sure the panel will have some very interesting things to say about those three issues of legislation, education, and investment. The focus today so far has been on the first two, but I think we must remember that the investment piece is also entirely linked to the behavior of the individual, and that's something that we need to make much more relevant as we think about DC solutions. Thank you very much.